Hi, everyone. Welcome back to the press. I'm Ryan Ballinger. We're here for our second show of the week. We're going to get a little bit more into the weeds on the Valspar Championship, the PGA Tour event this week down in the Tampa area. We had our first show of the week, kind of general overview. We looked at the model top 10. We looked at past champions, some horses for courses, and we'll kind of revisit a little bit of that and then spin it forward with a little bit more in depth about short-term form, some more advanced indicators, first-round leader plays, some stuff like that to kind of make things a little bit more nerdier in this episode, and then in future weeks when we have a full slate of tournaments outside of the PGA Tour, we'll talk about the LPGA, DP World Tour, Korn Ferry Tour, LIV, all those types of tours in their own episode, because we don't go quite as in-depth on many of those. We do on the LPGA, but not as many on the others. So we'll put that over to the side, and that way we can still have three episodes for you and kind of really get into the weeds a little bit on the tournament at hand in one of them. So, Valspar Championship, Innisbrook Resort Copperhead Course. Opened in 1974, Larry Packer design, par 71, 7,352 yards, the exact same yardage as last week of the Players' Championship. That was a par 72, and that course was expanded by 77 yards. This golf course has a very intriguing yardage scheme where pretty much all of the holes end in 0 or 5, except one hole on the course, and that's where you get to that 7352 number. Otherwise, it'd be 7350, which kind of tells you a little bit about the scorecard being a farce to a degree, especially here, but that's true everywhere. I mean, if you look at the Players last week, they changed hole yardages from year to year by 1, 2, 3, 4 yards just to make them a little bit different. I don't know why, whatever. $8.7 million purse, $1.566 million to the winner, 500 FedEx Cup points to the champion, about half of the world top 50 is competing this week. Again, want to re-look at our model top 10 before we kind of really get in the weeds here. Xander Schauffele, Tommy Fleetwood, Luke Clanton, the amateur turned pro. Again, only has 12 starts, but those 12 starts are really good. Shane Lowry, Justin Thomas is a top five. Sam Burns, a two-time champion here. Keith Mitchell, Adam Scott, Sepp Straka, and Lucas Glover are your top 10 in that model. Again, if you're a member of Golf News Net, for $40 a year, $70 for 2 years, or $100 for 3 years, you get access to the full model, 1 to 156 in the field. You can check that out at golfnewsnet.com, as well as all of the tools that we use, and frankly, I use to make those models each week. So, horses for courses, we'll go back over this a little bit. Obviously, Sam Burns being a two-time winner here, we're going to talk about. Xander Schauffele has a decent track record. Adam Hadwin, Justin Thomas have three top 15 finishes here in the last 5 years. And I put Jordan Spieth on the slide just to kind of represent that he has a decent past here. We referred to this a little bit in the first episode of the week, trying to talk about course fits, which we have a model for that we use for our members can have access to. And this golf course is truly unique in that 37-38% of the strokes gained of the top 25 finishers in this tournament the last 5 years come from putting, which is really bizarre compared to your typical PGA Tour course, more like 70-30. 68-32, not this way, 38-62. So like, of that, 62% tee to green, 18% off the tee, which is right about normal, and then 14% with the short game, which is also right about normal, 13 to 15% I would say is normal. But then, or more mainline, right? But then obviously the rest of that all goes into your approach play, which is closer to 30%, right? And that's a little bit higher than usual, just a little bit, usually, or a little bit lower than usual. It's interesting because, and I said this in the first episode, strokes gained on this course, because the putting surfaces are enormous, isn't so much about making putts. It's about not losing strokes putting, not three putting, not being on the wrong side of the hole, those types of things. Because if you're on the wrong side of the hole on some of these putting surfaces, especially at the pitch back to front on a number of them, you're bound to lose strokes putting. You're going to see bad strokes gain numbers putting this week. So just staying above water on strokes gain goes a long way in this tournament. Let's also talk about some past champions real quick. Again, kind of bizarre tournament to look at from that regard. And even the Players is not going to fit that category because you're going to have had two guys win four of the last seven played, right? You're going to have two guys win four of the last six played. So you got Paul Casey back-to-back, Sam Burns back-to-back, and two randoms in Taylor Moore and Peter Malnati winning. Obviously, Malnati has won before, He had won before this, but out of nowhere, I don't even know what he was last year, but it had to have been an insane number. And then just kind of went back to being Peter Malnati. So there you go. This doesn't really tell you a whole lot about what to expect. And not that it does every year, but there are some tournaments where past champions give you a really good idea of the kind of profile of player to expect. We certainly do not have that here. There's not a lot of commonality between these guys. Now, let's get into some geekier stuff. For our members at GolfNewsNet.com, we take a look at what we call our short-term model, short-term form rubric. I hate using model because we don't do any computations around it. We're just trying to get indicators about how well players are playing. So we have kind of three columns to look at here. And the middle column is our proprietary data, which is quality strokes gained, which is your strokes gained total multiplied each time out by the quality of your competition as measured by the official World Golf Ranking for a tournament. I know that's not perfect, but it works really well. So if in a major championship where you get 100 points to the winner, what we do is multiply that number by two, move the decimal place to the left by two. So that's a double, basically, your strokes gain is quality strokes gain for a major championship. Last week, the players be multiplying by 1.6 in a field where you get 50 official World Golf Ranking points to the winner. That's 1.0, right? So you keep the value of that. So if you're playing for less than that, you're diminishing the value of your strokes gain in quality strokes gain. Does that make sense? So we have different metrics that we're using to determine players who are playing well. Strokes gained overall, 1.2 or more per round in the last 10 tournaments played. 1.5 quality strokes gain or more per round in the last 10 events played. And then strokes gain on the approach. It's a tougher category because not many guys are flushers. And this kind of has a smaller group, but you can identify some guys who may be outliers who are maybe playing well in the approach, maybe not putting well at the moment, maybe not driving it well at the moment. But I really care about your approach play. I mean, that and strokes gained off the tee, but I think approach play really goes a long way indicating how consistent of a player you are, how really what your ceiling is as a player. So if you're gaining strokes on the approach and you're not doing it overall, that's still a good indicator to me that you could play well. So 0.6 strokes per round on the approach is the metric to make that list. So obviously we're working from left to right, and this is generally how it works. You have kind of a bigger pool of players who are meeting that 1.2 strokes gained in total per round metric. Then quality strokes per gain, some guys fall off because they're not playing the best competition leading into it, and then strokes gained on the approach really falls off. So if you're on all three lists, I like you a lot. If you're on two of them, very strong. If you make one, you're a guy to consider. So take it from the left, Alex Smalley, Tommy Fleetwood. These are in order, by the way, from highest to lowest. Joseph Bramlett, Justin Thomas, Sepp Straka, Bud Cauley, Danny Walker, Steven Yeager, Lucas Glover. A couple of those guys significantly helped by the players. Obviously, Danny Walker and Bud Cauley were helped tremendously by it. Alex Smalley to a degree, but he had a great week otherwise at API. So that not necessarily, and Cognizant, so not necessarily limited for him. But a couple of those guys obviously stand out because of great weeks at Sawgrass. So then we move it along a little bit more, try to winnow it down a little bit more with quality strokes gained in that 1.5 or more per round. Now we're going to lose like guys like Joseph Bramlett, right? Steven Yeager did his damage in Mexico. So, okay, now you lose him because he was playing for almost no points whatsoever in that tournament. Joseph Bramlett did his damage in Puerto Rico and in Mexico. We didn't really get strokes gained from Puerto Rico. So Bramlett playing well there should actually kind of help him a little bit, should help his rating here. It still wouldn't be good enough to qualify for that quality strokes gained number, but just know that because you don't get strokes gained data from Puerto Rico, which hurts guys like Carl Phillips, for example, in our modeling. We don't have that data. We don't have that broken out. So Alex Smalley, Tommy Fleetwood, Justin Thomas, Sepp Straka, Shane Lowry, Bud Cauley, Danny Walker, Lucas Glover. Again, those guys playing in basically a major atmosphere in Cauley and Walker and gaining a ton of strokes, having a great week helps them out here. Now you get to the real test. Can you make it on all three? Can you be on the strokes gained approach list? And those guys are Tommy Fleetwood, Joseph Bramlett, Justin Thomas, and Shane Lowry. So those would be the guys that I would think, hey, I love them a lot this week because of the way they're playing. That all said, let's take a look at something I love that is very nerdy, and we don't talk about it enough on this show because it's hard for people to explain. And honestly, I had someone who was trying out the Golf News Net membership call me and say, I need to cancel. And I said, well, what did we do wrong? And he said, it's just too complicated. there's just too much stuff that you need to consider. And I just kind of want to guess. And there's a lot of analysis that goes into thinking about bets each week. And if you want to be a long-term winning player as a bettor, you need to consider this kind of stuff. And I don't think enough people do it. And that's why, for many reasons, it's so hard to bet this sport. But I look at this as a really good indicator of what kind of player you have been in the last 30 events on the PGA Tour. What did your strokes gained tee to green look like? And more importantly, what does your variance look like? What does your statistical variance look like? If you're gaining strokes tee to green, that's great in the main. However, if you're going wildly from one extreme to another, and it's highly variable from one dot plot to the next, I'm not as interested because I know what your ceiling is, but I also know what your floor is. So I'm looking for guys who have relatively low variance. And that's not a metric most people talk about. For our variance purposes, that metric is under 1.2. And then these are leaders that qualify for that in descending order. You know, top being Tommy Fleetwood in terms of that strokes gained, low variance. His variance number is like 0.45. Shane Lowry's is also pretty low, similar range. Again, those are the only guys on this list with strokes gained variance under 0.6. Really, any under 0.1 in total. All these other guys are kind of right on the edge. So they are extremely consistent tee to green. You know Fleetwood's a bad putter. Lowry's variable with the putter, but he also has a good short game. So Lowry's been playing really solid golf, right? Then you got Tom Kim. Very good tee to green player, awful putter. Justin Thomas. You can kind of catch him adrift. Max McGreevy, Joseph Bramlett also on this list. Again, playing great tee to green and relatively low variance. Doesn't get as many opportunities, right, because he has limited status. So you have to have that asterisk around him. But that is a guy that really kind of stood out to me. And then Charlie Hoffman, actually, playing pretty good golf this year. Doesn't get a whole lot of love for it, but playing pretty good golf and pretty consistent golf. Because he has to play a certain way. And that's another thing we can think about. Especially for those guys who are older, maybe don't hit it as far. You have to play golf a certain way to be successful. And Charlie Hoffman knows he's not that long. He knows the only thing he can really do is kind of get it out there, get in, play as best he can, and hit the green. And then give himself a chance to see what happens with the putter. That's what you do at this stage of your career. And that makes it a little bit more impressive. He can really only play one way and be successful, and he's still on this list. Not that I'm betting him to win. I just, he qualifies, right? And then I also want to throw this one out there. This is another tool that we use for our members over at golfnewsnet.com. We talk a lot about top 20 bets around the major championships. We don't do that so much week to week just because I don't find them as attractive for these regular tournaments and certainly Oppo events. But I did want to bring them up here because we have a track. We look at the last 50 events played, and we look at the percentage of the time a player finishes, obviously with a win, in the top 10, top 5, top 20, and top 40. Now, most people aren't going to bet top 5s and 10s unless you have an intuition they're going to win. But you may bet someone separately on a top 20 or top 40, depending on how you feel about them. There's a lot less value in top 40s and 20s. So I wanted to talk about 20s here specifically as it relates to the field this week. There are 6 players in the field that in the last 50 PGA Tour events played have been in the top 20 40% of the time or more. And it goes up to the max level. You know, the max level, Scottie Scheffler is like 80% of the time. Rory, 80% of the time. Xander's up there. I think it's like, it's an insane number. It's a very high number. But we go down all the way into basically just above 40%. I would tell you that's a solid indicator range. So if you're getting into the Luke Clinton, Corey Connors of the world, you're still not going to get great money on them to necessarily get in that top 20. But I do like them as top 20 bets. But you look at these guys, clearly the best players in the field. That they get in the top 20 a lot. They are the most consistent players in the field in terms of percentage over the last 50 events played. Just wanted to bring that up, and we will bring that up each week. I think it's helpful to kind of see that number in the field. And it's going to be pretty consistent from tournament to tournament, but just to kind of see those players who qualify will just change based on the field. And also guys who get to play in the signature events a lot. You get a better shot at the top 20, right, when there's 72 starting players and there's a cut, if any, to the top 50 in ties and 10 shots of lead. Well, you've got a chance of 4 rounds to get in the top 20. If you're playing 132, 144, 156 guy fields, those percentages are much lower. So you have to also kind of include that a little bit in looking at this as well. But it doesn't matter. And then I wanted to bring up some first-round strokes game leaders specific to Innisbrook on the Copperhead course at Valspar. These are the guys who have done best, who have multiple years of experience at this tournament. Because if you look at the tool that we use for this, there are guys on that list who have one year of experience, or two rounds of experience, 1 year, but a missed cut of experience. Usually they don't kind of match into the first round leaders thing. But we have this tool that looks at this and says, hey, what by round, how did you gain your strokes, right? So looking at that number, we're looking against that statistical scoring average, right? And we're getting those numbers from there. These are the guys that really most impressed me. Kevin Roy is a guy I threw out to the Twitter community. The Twitter betting community is a guy I really like this week. I think he's very interesting as a longer shot play. He's been playing well to start the year. He also has a decent experience on this golf course. Corey Connors has been playing great. It kind of seems like it's going to fall right into his hands. And then, of course, knowing how golf betting and sports betting works, they'll pull the rug right out from under you just when you think you had it, just like last week at Hideki Matsuyama. Fleetwood qualifies. Connors qualifies. Sam Burns surely does. Lucas Glover is interesting. Patton Kizzire is kind of interesting. Surprisingly good first round. He also tends to gain a lot of his strokes in the first and second round and then trails off. And when he wins, he just doesn't play bad. And then Justin Thomas as well. So some interesting potential first round leader plays in there, particularly with Connors, Kevin Roy. Then I would throw in Patton Kizzire as well to that group. So with all that said, let's just pick out a couple of guys to look at based on all the information. Guys that, whose names keep coming up. Fleetwood comes up a lot. Thomas comes up a lot. Connors comes up a lot. Lowry comes up a lot. But a lot of the guys that people are interested in, like a Michael Kim, he hasn't come up a lot based on anything about the course. He's just playing good golf. So, you know, there's still a whole lot of value in guys that are playing good golf that might not be course darlings, right? Jake Knapp's a guy that's been playing really, really well. He's going to get a lot of love this week. Luke Clanton's going to get a lot of love this week because he can win this tournament, even though he's barely a professional golfer at this point. Steven Yeager gets a lot of love because he played well at the Players' Championship. He has a fair amount of variability, a variance in his strokes game. Doesn't mean I don't like him. I like Max McGreevy a lot. I've been playing fairly consistently. Consistently mediocre, but consistently. And then Sam Stevens has been playing really well. I think you're going to like Billy Horschel this week a little bit, but Kevin Roy at that 90-1 number intrigues me quite a bit, and I am going to play it. Adam Shank, I mentioned this is our first episode of the week. We talked to him for our Road to French Lick show about the Korn Ferry Tour because he works with the French Lick Resort, which is our sponsor for the program. And Shank was saying he's close. He's really close. So I'm going to be interested in him 135-1. Yeah, you also guys have a ton of guys with relative lack of experience in the PGA Tour, like Jesper Svensson to a degree, Nicholas Norgaard, Ryan Gerard to a degree. You know, I like Ryan Gerard as a consistent player. And at one point last year, he was one of the hottest players on the planet. He's capable of doing it. He's capable of playing well in a golf course like this. I can see some parallels to Thorne Blake Club, where he won the Korn Ferry Tour last year in South Carolina. Could be interesting. Charlie Hoffman, 135-1. One of those guys, low variance players. Might not be good, but it's consistently pretty decent. And if he can turn that kind of lagging indicator into a slightly exceptional week, he could be a winner here. Not saying to play it, just saying that's how I think about some of these things. And then some of the longer shot guys we've kind of mentioned here. Again, none really appear on any list, right? They would have much shorter odds if they appeared on any of the graphics before earlier in the show, but they didn't, and there's a reason for that. So I do like Eric Cole as a course fit. We didn't put out a course fit list of guys in the graphics for this week. I do like him quite a bit as a potential course fit. Other than that, really no one on this list strikes me as being particularly interesting. So, you know, choose wisely. But we also know that people like Peter Malnati and Taylor Moore won. Peter Malnati was a super long shot. Taylor Moore, not so much, more in that kind of 150-ish range when he won just a few years back. But know that, yeah, we're not talking about guys past 251. I promise you there's going to be somebody that makes you scratch your head and go, why didn't you think about that? Why did he cut it off so soon? I mean, I'll give you the honest truth. Camilo Vijegos was ranked dead last in my ranking last week. Dead last. He was tied for first round leader. Just because they rank poorly doesn't mean they're not, you know, incapable of playing great golf. You are on the PGA Tour for a reason. And if you're someone like Camilo who's been on there forever, you're definitely on there for a reason. That doesn't mean you're incapable of playing great golf. It just means you're much less likely to do so. So knowing that, keeping that in mind, there might be some guys to look at longer than this. I'm not going to, for the purposes of the show, throw darts like that. But the one dart we threw last week, Hayden Springer, that was, you know, 650-1 or something that went off, he did pretty well, made the cut, right? As a top 20 bet, didn't get there, but also an interesting, worthwhile play. Danny Walker, 20th in the Korn Ferry Tour points list last year, first guy in the field because Jason Day WD wasn't even on an odds board. He probably would have been 650-1 live the second he got in the field. He had himself a great week. You never know what's possible. But we tend to look toward the shorter than 70-1 range and throw in a couple of folks to kind of long shot, make it interesting. And if you get there, hey, you got a nudge, you got a feeling, good for you. All right, that's going to do it for us, talking about the Valspar Championship and talking about everything this week on the press. Thanks so much for watching or listening. You can catch the show on Golf News Net TV. You can also catch on our YouTube channel. Golf News Net TV is available on Zine, Free Live Sports, Freecast, as well on Roku on the Golf News Net app. You can catch all of our shows on demand there, which we're happy to have. An update for Amazon Fire coming soon as well, where you'll be able to do the same thing. Watch the channel live and catch all of our stuff on demand. You can also listen to this as a podcast on your podcast platform of choice. You can subscribe to the channel, Golf News Net Radio on YouTube, and get all of our shows as audio-only podcasts. So if you just want to listen on YouTube, if that's your preferred method of listening, happy to have you there as well. You can join Discord, and you can join Golf News Net for $40 a year, $70 for 2 years, or $100 for 3 years over at golfnewsnet.com. Hope you have a great, successful week of betting this week. Love to see those winners out there. If you are so inclined, tell a friend about the show, and we'll be back next week. Get right back into it. We're just a few weeks away from the Masters, so we're going to start that prep work in episodes starting next week. Start getting ready for that. Start getting our futures down and start thinking about who could win. And we're going to tell you the secret metric that we've been using for the last several years to be so successful in betting the Masters. I'm Ryan Ballingy. Thank you so much for watching.